It's Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Every month, we chat with contributor Robert Cohen about the life and work of a touring classical musician in a series we call On That Note.
This month, we realized that over the years we've been doing this segment, we have never talked about the audition process that musicians go through. Cohen says, fortunately, he's past the point where he has to worry about upcoming auditions.
When I started out in my career, I was entering competitions and doing auditions for all sorts of things. And it was kind of a terrifying experience. And now, of course, what I'm doing is sitting on the other side of the table, or sometimes even the screen. You know, sometimes auditions are held behind a screen, which is really odd because you know that they can't see you and you can't see them. And you can't actually even hear that well because sound, you know, normally comes directly to you, but there's this kind of, I don't know, wooden screen or a material screen blocking out half the sound. And that's quite disturbing when you're trying to consider how somebody's performing. And it's kind of disturbing, I'm sure, to be playing into a curtain. And the other type of auditioning that we're having a lot of these days is kind of video or audio that's sent as a first round, say, for a competition. So, you know, 150 people will send in their videos, which are made, I don't know, sometimes just on their mobile phones, or maybe, you know, somebody's got better equipment at their school or something like that. So when you sit down, like I did actually today, I was sitting on an auditioning panel for a competition and listening to and a lot of different people playing, and sometimes they're playing just like, you know, a few feet away from their little telephone, which is recording them playing some major repertoire. Other times it's quite professional. And, you know, I feel for them. I think it's so stressful to be that person wondering how they should play. I think people very often wonder how they should play to impress the jury, as we're called sometimes. I mean, that's such a terrible expression, isn't it? But we are the auditioning panel, and they practice and try to make everything as perfect as possible. And sometimes they try to play in a way that they won't offend people's, you know, the jury's opinions about music. So they might try to play in a very neutral fashion. I know students often say to me, oh, I shouldn't be too expressive. You know, if I play Bach in a certain fashion and then one jury member really hates it, that's not going to be good for me. So maybe I'll just play it in a very neutral, inoffensive way. So you get people setting themselves up with all these expectations of what the jury might think.
That's one of the things that's so hard if you're the person auditioning, unless it's a particular orchestra that you know what that sound is that the orchestra produces. And so you know whether your sound matches that or can fit into that or not. You're guessing. You're just guessing what the jury might like or not like in your playing. It seems to me that you just need to play the way you play.
Well, that's what I always say to my students before they do an audition. I always just say, you just have to be honest and play the way you feel, because it's also no good being chosen for a way that you don't normally play, because then you're going to be out of place, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I even know a very famous musician who did a big international solo competition, and he decided on a plan of action. He decided how to play to please the jury that he knew who the jury members were because their names had been published. And he had a sense that he should play his repertoire in a certain way, and also his choice of repertoire for the competition. And he actually won the competition. But for literally 20 years afterwards, he was complaining bitterly because he said, well, people are really expecting me to play like that, and it's not how I would like to play, and I don't want to play that way. But, you know, there's this kind of pressure on me to do it that way.
And I did it this way in order to get that competition. That was the only reason. Yeah.
Honesty is the only policy, really. But it's tricky also because some competitions, they expect you to choose some of the repertoire yourself. So they might give you some guidelines, or they might say, choose from this list. And then, you know, you have to decide What do you think will be most impressive, or what shows your qualities? And what I find being on the jury very often is I think, how interesting that they should have chosen those pieces. When I'm listening to a violinist play a certain piece, I'll think, you know, why would they choose that? Given their qualities, why would they choose that piece? And I find it very intriguing, because sometimes the player actually is not the best person to choose what works well for them. And I think sometimes people do literally choose the wrong repertoire and kind of get knocked out of the competition just because they didn't choose the right things.
Right, set themselves up for failure from the get-go.
That's right. And, you know, the thing is, we're talking about quite a lot of time. I mean, this is not like these TV shows where somebody is trying to show their talent and they sing a song for 2 minutes or something like that. In these competitions, sometimes you're having to put forward maybe 90 minutes of music, and you're going to be listened to initially for maybe 15 minutes. And within that 15 minutes, you're really exposing yourself to, you know, the audition panel. They're going to see an awful lot about what you do, how you do it, your technique, your choices of music, all of these things, your musicality. And very often, you know, just the question of whether you can engage with the jury, because this is a major problem when you're, for instance, looking at video auditioning section. You're just watching video after video. Some people are, you know, their videos are recorded at a concert, so you get a feeling of occasion, and you can sense that the artist is, you know, playing to the audience. And like I said before, other times you get somebody literally, they've just propped up their cell phone and they're playing to it in their bedroom. And you just wonder, is that person engaging with you, the person watching, in the right way? And those are kind of critical factors. And I think it's very hard when you're recording those things to have a sense, you know, you're just going to send it off. And, in, you know, it's very, very anonymous.
Right.
You're not playing to anybody. You don't know who's going to hear it. And you've got to somehow perform in a way that is impressive. And when we watch those videos or those performances, it's really most often the performers who grab your attention, because, you know, they just, there's something about their playing that is so riveting that you just put your pencil down, stop writing notes, and stop deciding what their mark might be, and just really enjoy the music and feel, you know, super impressed that they are just grabbing your attention. Those are the ones that make the day enjoyable, because it can be very hard otherwise.
Somewhat excruciating, I would imagine, particularly hearing the same piece over and over and over and over.
That's true. You do often have to do that.
Yeah. Now, in a perfect world, how would you change the audition process to make it both representative of the people auditioning and also taking into account, you know, the people who are doing the judging? What would be some of the things that you would do if you could?
Well, I suppose, you know, there's limits. I mean, first of all, if you have a competition that's trying to select somebody to be a potential new young star as a soloist, you initially need to know that they have, you know, a minimum standard, that they're technically able, and that they have some, you know, qualities in their playing. So I think initially you do those videos or audition processes have to take place. But I think then after that point, perhaps giving, you know, if you're really selecting two or three top level people, that's when you need these live events. And that, there are competitions, of course, and many that have the final rounds in public, and everybody gets to hear this person perform a solo or with orchestra in front of an audience, and really feel the atmosphere, and whether this is an artist more than just a player. And those kind of things are, they're well established, that process. But I think for auditions for orchestras and things like that, usually the best process is that if somebody is basically of a minimum level, that they immediately then get some sort of trial with the orchestra. It's another one of these words that sounds like jury and trial. It sounds so terrible. That somebody gets an invitation to sit into the orchestra and play with them for a certain amount of time and see how they get on with their colleagues and whether they contribute nicely and whether they're going to fit in with, you know, their style, their sound, and all the things that you mentioned before. And that, of course, also does happen as well. So I'm not sure there's a lot of improvement that can be made. But on the other hand, there are many competitions which are sadly really rigged. And this is a major problem for the music world, because a lot of competitions which are important international competitions are obviously selecting winners who may also represent in some form their teachers, their previous teachers or their present teachers. So, of course, it becomes not just about whether somebody plays brilliantly, but who they learned with. And there is a major problem in the international competition setup, which is that teachers are very much involved in being jury members. And in a really fair situation, no teacher should be judging when their own students are on the competition, because otherwise that's bias, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it's in a built-in bias right there. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's very, very common. And in fact, the kind of career of certain teachers is reliant on having competition, their students winning competitions. Because if your student wins a big competition, then obviously more young artists will come to you to study because they think, well, this is must be a great teacher. And also they're not naive. They also know that this is a kind of route to possibly winning competitions.
Which then, of course, if you win that competition, then you get lucrative contracts for performances or other
exactly.
invitations, which can make your career.
Indeed, those are very important competitions to win. It also brings into question whether music really can be in any way a competitive thing, because, you know, I think all musicians know that you can't really judge one person from another. Not really like one person goes first and next person goes second, because it's really very subjective.
Yeah.
And it's very much a question of how that artist is that evening, you know, whether they are playing the music that they really love, you know, whether they're really healthy at that moment, whether they collaborate well with the conductor or the orchestra. There are so many variables that, you know, when you're talking about a selection of very, very fine performers, and then you're trying to put them in some sort of order, I don't think music can be measured in that way. But it's kind of, you know, competitions are being promoted all over the world. I mean, I constantly receive information asking me to put my students forward for yet another competition that's just, you know, risen from somewhere. I mean, literally, competitions are all over the place. Every country has thousands of them. And in a way, that's caused another problem, which is that there are so many competitions that they lose their value because,
right.
you know, somebody, for instance, somebody came to audition today for a competition, and I looked at their CV, which shows that they've already won 15 other competitions. And I'm thinking, well, surely if these competitions are worthwhile, why do you need to do 15 of them? And
well,
yet
or
another
16th,
one.
And here
yes.
you are doing the 16th, yeah. Well, and it makes me think, you know, human beings aren't widgets. You know, when you get past a certain, you assume a certain technical skill and standard, you assume, you know, a certain amount of training to get to a certain high level. At that point, it becomes subjective and it's a matter of taste. And I think we do a disservice to music when we try to do that, when we try to fit people into these little narrow categories at that level. You know, I think competitions might be great as you're working your way up as a young musician to learn how to perform under pressure, to, you know, to win some, to lose some, whatever it is, to kind of get the idea that, you know, I have to bring my A game to every
yes.
performance that I do. But once you get to a certain level,
I think, you know, of course, naturally, the reason why you do it and the reason why I did it back in the day was because you want exposure. You want to be you want to be seen, and you hopefully you'll be seen by somebody. And it's often the case you can be seen by somebody on the jury, some eminent musician, so that even if you don't win the competition, that person, you know, will come to you and say, look, I loved your playing. I want you to come and play here. I want you to do this. And they will start promoting you in their own way. And of course, that's what we want. We all want a break. We all want the chance to be seen and to be heard. But it has become so commercial in a way, which is disappointing. You know, people are prepared to put money up for another competition. I mean, there are competitions where people win $20,000-$30,000. And you think, well, I'm sure if that person, you know, instead of just putting it into competition, how about putting that into a concert series where you invite people to play
and pay them.
Give concerts, you know.
And pay them.
And pay them, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, there are so many good ways to support the arts. We don't really need another competition.
Well, Robert, I don't know that we have the answer, but as always, I'm so happy to be talking with you about it and thinking about it, and I look forward to catching up with you again next month.
Me too. Lovely to talk to you, Bonnie.
Robert Cohen is a professional cellist and a regular Lake Effect contributor. We reached him at his home in London. ¶¶